Good afternoon and welcome back. It's 208 here on WWLAMFM.com and always live on the free Odyssey app. I'm Ian Hoke sitting in for Scoot. He'll be back on Wednesday. In just a few minutes, we'll do the news bomb. I did want to read a couple of your text messages before we move on here. Oh, yeah, I did want to say, so yeah, everyone feels real bad because the Saints lost and LSU lost and the Pelicans lost. I got a text message here that says, hey, what about Tulane? Tulane's undefeated in the conference. That's my bad. I'm sorry. I forgot to mention Tulane. They won this weekend. That's very exciting. I can't believe I forgot to do this last hour. I feel like a jerk. I just wanted to take a few seconds to just extend my well wishes and prayers to the family and friends of Eric Paulson. That happened so fast, and I have no idea what that must be like for them. I think we all know people who have, succumbed to cancer after, 6 years or a number of months or maybe 1 year. But Mr. Paulson's turnaround was just so fast. I just hope the speed with which that happened meant that it also maybe was painless. I don't know if it was painless or not. But God, just what a loss. And I mean, just all the people that work at WWL TV, I've been seeing their tweets all weekend and the way that they speak about him and the way that he was towards them as a friend and as a mentor. He was just an incredibly high quality person, and we thank him for his work, and he'll be missed. Joining us on the line right now is Chris Champagne. Chris is the author of Secret Louisiana, An Unusual Guide. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ian. How you doing? I'd like to second your motion about Eric. He was a stand-up guy.
Indeed. I had never met him in person. There's no reason to think that he knew who I was, but in the way that you think you know somebody because you watch them on TV or you hear them on the radio, man, what a loss, indeed. Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
Yes, I did. I was on a couple of panels with him, and he was very nice to me and always kind of supportive of me, so I appreciated that.
I wonder if that was the same panel that you and I met on.
No, I don't think it was, actually, but I think it was a little bit earlier than that one. But it might have been. It might have been.
Who knows? Okay, Chris, I ran into you at the People's Health remote that we did out there on Veterans Boulevard last week, and you introduced yourself and said, I'm familiar with you from the panel we were on and from your work in the radio, and you wanted to tell me about your book. And I got a copy of it, and I've been flipping through it since we spoke last. And I'm really impressed, man. I didn't have, low expectations for what your book was going to be like, but it's just pleasantly surprising. It's just so well put together and easy to read, and I can't wait to just, get in a car or get in a train and just go look at some of this stuff. If you can, just give our listeners the sort of elevator pitch about what this book is and what inspired you to write it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the compliments. Yeah, well, I wrote Secret New Orleans previously for Jean Les Public Editions, which is the publisher of this book. They're in Versailles, France. They do guidebooks for cities all over the world. This is the first time they've ever done a state. So I pitched the idea to Mr. Jean Les, and he accepted. And so I went around the state. I drove over 14,000 miles. And they're smaller museums, things you might not run across in other guidebooks, there's a place in Scott, Louisiana that's out in the country, not too far off the interstate, and there's three trees that a lady put together to unburden your soul. It's called the Tree of Souls. You just throw your shoes up on it, and you make some kind of a meditative statement to yourself about it, I guess, and things like that. The American Fencing Museum is in Shreveport. You wouldn't think it would be there, and it's kind of an unexpected find. And, it was just fun just to drive around the state. It took me a long time to do it, and the book, I think, did turn out really well. It looks pretty good, I think. I appreciate your kind words.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any other favorites or markers or entries in your book that really surprised you or took you off guard?
Well, the grave that the only person to survive the Alamo is in northwestern Louisiana, Moses Rose is his name. So there's a story about most of the entries. In order to get in the book, you had to have some kind of a story. You had to have something to say about it. So that was kind of an unexpected find. The former capital of Texas is also in Louisiana. It's just Los Ades. It's just west of Natchitoches. Two of my favorite things, I think, was that there's a religious painting in a Catholic church near Brobridge, where there's a rendition of the Last Supper, and on the table to the left of Jesus is a bottle of hot sauce. So that was kind of an interesting find. That might be my favorite one, I think.
That is so funny.
Yeah, it is. And at LSU, they have the original Mike the Tiger. He's stuffed in a little museum not too far from the stadium.
Oh my God.
I don't think a lot of people might know about that. And then I guess my favorite find was a friend of mine works at LSU, and he kind of stumbled across this. And there's an old blackboard from the 1946 Vanderbilt LSU game, and they have the starting lineup of the LSU team, you know, chalked in. And Y.E. Tittle, who's a very famous quarterback at LSU, was the quarterback. Mm-hmm. But if you go two up, you see the name Champagne, which is my dad, who played at LSU and was All-American there. So that was kind of that's probably my favorite find, I guess.
Okay, so, like, what's the target audience for this book? Who do you find is most interested in these kind of secret guides about places where they lived and their families lived for generations? Like, how do you get people to recognize that there's stuff all around them that they don't know about?
Well, I think it's a dual. I think if people who are coming from someplace else, they're looking for something unusual. It does say unusual guide, so they might be drawn to it. But I think also local people, which you just said in the beginning, I think it's a great book to take a road trip with, you know, and I think that it has a local audience as well as a, you know, visiting audience, tourist audience.
Wow. Oh, I'm just looking at the... Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. That's about all I had to say about that at the moment.
Okay, I'm looking at the last page in the book here. It says from the same publisher, they've got secret guides for all sorts of different places, like all these, you know, major cities and different places all over the world. So your book is actually part of a sort of broader collection of these secret guides. You're in good company here, man.
Yes, that's true. He's done almost every major city, I think, in Europe at this point. And when I did Secret New Orleans in 2017, I think I was the third or fourth city he'd done in North America. I think I was fourth as Washington, New York, and Montreal. And the other thing is, I think that the book is also going to be published in French, because since it's a French publisher.
Smart.
So I think that it'll appeal to people who come from French-speaking countries to Louisiana, and Louisiana is almost perfect for that because there's so many connections to France in our history here. And wow. I think that'll appeal to people, you know, from those French-speaking countries.
So I know you said that you drove 14,000 miles to collect all this information. If you already said this,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but how long did that take you to not only to do all the driving, but to actually, you know, go in and you know, examine these places and take these photos and such?
Well, it took me 2.5 years, actually,
yeah,
which is longer than I thought it would. But I had
wow.
to go back to some places again to get better photos and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
if you saw the car I drove around in, you'd be amazed as well. But that's another story. But it made it.
What car were you driving for all that?
Well, I had a Toyota that had about 270,000 miles on it at the end, and I had a hole in the roof because my moon roof blew off, so I had something over the top of it, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. How did you? Wow.
Yeah, but
that's crazy.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay.
I've got a book signing coming up.
Yeah, please, go ahead and tell us about that.
I've got a book signing coming up on November 13th at Octavia Books.
13th.
It's a Wednesday night at 7. So I wanted to get that in if I could, or Tom would be mad at me.
Okay, great. Yeah, of course. November 13th at Octavia Books. And, of course, we love to support our local booksellers, but for somebody who that's not available an option right now or they can't drive all the way here, this is available anywhere books are sold, isn't that right?
Sure. You can get it almost any bookstore. That's one of the things about these books. I mean, Mr. Zhang Liz,
right.
You can get them on Amazon. But you also, if you can go to some of the local booksellers, I'd appreciate that as well. Because Blue Cypress has them and Garden District has them as well.
We love Blue Cypress, Blue Cypress, Garden District, and Octavia. Anything else you want our audience to know before we let you go, Mr. Chris?
No, that's all. Although the Secret New Orleans books are still available as well, they were a pretty good seller, so you can look for both of those. And I think you won't be disappointed like you were. And I appreciate the kind words.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait to get started.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Nice to speak with you again, Chris. Take good care out there. We'll see you next time, man.
Okay, man. Thank you again. Bye bye.
Absolutely. All right. When we come back, we'll do that news bomb. We got some sort of unfortunate political narrative lines that we got to kind of touch on today, but we'll try to kind of containerize that to the 2 o'clock hour. So if you want to talk about that with me, now's the time to do it. We're going to kind of try to move on after 3 o'clock. But, you know, it's election season, and, you know, people love to complain, like, I'm tired of hearing the same thing every day. I'm tired. The whole country is so tired of this election. We are ready for it to be over. Hopefully it's over a week from tomorrow, or at least sometime in the middle of next week. But until then, we have to talk about this, and we will talk about it, and we will make it useful to you, entertaining, and insightful. That's my promise. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. We'll be right back after this. 2:23 in the afternoon here. Oh, God, what is today's date? October 28th, 2024. Only 8 days left until Election Day. I would love to go to bed on election night knowing who won. I'm not holding out hope for that. I'm just going to say I would love for that to happen. Maybe that'll help manifest it in some way. But, you know, most observers say that that's not really realistic. So everybody's just going to have to be patient. There's a text message here that says, "You were doing so good, and then you said it. I am so sick of politics. Can't we please have one day?" No. No, I'm afraid you cannot have one day. You can have a couple hours on this program where we're not talking about politics. Like I said, and try to kind of containerize this to the 2 o'clock hour so we're not spending all afternoon on it. I mean, after all, whose mind isn't made up at this point? What arguments are there left that can be deployed that are going to sway these undecided independent voters? I don't know what's left. And so many millions of people have already voted anyway. But this is what we do. And it's not always fun and it's not always easy. But my promise to you is that I will always try and deliver this information to you in a way that feels useful to you. You know, it's not just heat, it's light. That's what I'm aiming for. Is that going to work all the time? Is that going to work on you and not other? I mean, I don't know. But, you know, like you hear me say often, we're all here to do what we're all here to do. A couple other texts I did want to kind of clean up here. Here's one that says, "I heard literally zero negative things about the last 3 days. There was such a good vibe downtown collectively. I kept hearing the word tailgating." Amazing. Yeah, I didn't hear tailgating, but that's pretty funny. Yeah, I live in the French Quarter, and I got to tell you, the vibe downtown was immaculate. Everyone's just walking around. You know, imagine that the Saints just won their sixth game in a row, and everybody gets out of the Superdome and they're walking around buying Saints gear and singing Saints songs and wearing their Saints shirts and celebrating. I mean, that's kind of the vibe it was for the Swifties anyway. On the other side of the coin, here's a text that says, "I got a text at 2 a.m. from my 23-year-old son. He's in the restaurant industry. And he said, I am no longer a Taylor Swift fan. These Swifties made my life hell at work." I am so sorry to hear that about your son. I wonder which part of the restaurant industry he works in. Is he a server or a bartender or a cook or a busboy or something else? Because if you don't get to interface with the Swifties and all you have is the busyness of it all, then yeah, I can see how that would be taxing. Like, you're going to be very, very busy for these 3 or 4 days, but you don't have all those people smiling at you when they come in to get your gumbo or whatever. Here's a text that says, "Ian, I don't expect that you listened to or had any interest, but did you by any chance happen to listen to the Joe Rogan podcast with Trump? It was really good. Over 13 million views in 12 hours, and that was on Saturday." And I texted this person back and I said, of course, I heard the highlights. I read a lot about it. I did not allocate 3 hours during this particular weekend to listen to the Trump episode of the Joe Rogan podcast. I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to do that again. But I mean, I'll say this. What I heard about it identified two really interesting things for me. One is that I definitely heard Trump say to Joe Rogan that he lost in 2020 and he immediately corrected himself. But, you know, it's hard to listen to that moment or watch that moment on YouTube and not think like, come, that's, you know that you lost. You know that you're lost and now you're covering up for yourself. And Joe Rogan kind of did not let him get away with that. He gave him plenty of time to say, okay, well, what were the laws that were changed? What were the legislative changes that made it unfair, the election unfair, and led to you losing? And Trump couldn't name any. And Joe Rogan kept kind of saying, well, like, you know, trying to pin him down on this, which is not an easy thing to do. And Trump kind of never really gave him a solid answer. And Joe Rogan had to kind of move on. So, I don't know. You see a lot more of the weave in that interview, him kind of rambling and talking about topic X when he was asked about topic Y. You see that almost every time he speaks. And I'll say this, and Scoot spoke a little bit about this last week, too. The most interesting interviews that we have seen from both of these candidates in this cycle are coming from podcasters and YouTubers. They're not coming from the legacy media. They're not coming from 60 Minutes or Katie Couric or 2020 or these hits on Fox News or MSNBC or CNN or whatever. It's, you know, Call Her Daddy. It's Joe Rogan. It's Lex Fridman. Those are the moments in this campaign where we've actually learned something new or had at least a moment that we haven't experienced before in terms of the way that our candidates are interacting with the media. I'm very curious to see what the landscape is going to be like in 2028. Okay, I see I got a couple calls stacking up. I'm going to get to you in just a moment. But first, please, Coleman, let's do the news bomb.
Ow! God.
Puerto Rican pride and the island's slow recovery in their comeback from Hurricane Maria, those have now become a flashpoint in the presidential campaign.
A comedian's comments warming up the crowd at Donald Trump's campaign rally at Madison Square Garden drew a strong reaction from some Puerto Ricans, including recording artist Bad Bunny, stand-up comedian Tony Hinchcliffe.
A floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah. I think it's called Puerto Rico.
Later, Hinchcliffe said Latinos, they love making babies and that they don't use the pullout method.
No, no, no.
Within minutes, Puerto Rican singer Bad Bunny signaled his support for Kamala Harris, sharing her plan for the island with his 45 million followers on Instagram.
Puerto Rico's economic future depends on urgently rebuilding and modernizing the island's energy grid.
Musicians Ricky Martin and Despacito artist Luis Fonsi also posted they were offended by the comment. In a statement, Trump campaign spokeswoman Daniel Alvarez said this joke does not reflect the views of President Trump or the campaign. Harris visited a Puerto Rican restaurant, Freddie and Tony's, in Philadelphia's Fair Hill neighborhood.
To attract investment, to finally deal with that
crisis. I'm Jennifer King.
Alvarez says that joke does not represent the views of Donald Trump or the campaign. That is the kind of like pseudo apology that you almost never get from Donald Trump or his campaign handlers. It's attack, 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 bully, bully, bully. Never admit you're wrong. Never admit you said something on, you know, off color. Never admit that you were offensive. I think they realize that this is a political liability for them, even though we're only just 8 days left. If there are any Latino voters in Philadelphia that have not decided who they're going to vote for yet, they think this matters, which is why they pounced on it immediately. And of course, there's people in the media who are coming to defend Mr. Hinchcliffe's joke and saying, it's just a joke. He's a comedian. This is what he does. And again, if you just look at that one incident, okay, gross comment, but you're a comedian. And if you want to be offensive at a Trump rally, that's your right. But we got to zoom out and look at the whole picture and connect the dots. Hinchcliffe also pointed to a man in the audience and he said, "That's cool. A black guy with a thing on his head. What the hell is that? A lampshade? Look at this guy. Oh my goodness. Wow." "I'm just kidding. That's one of my buddies. He had a Halloween party last night. We had fun. We carved watermelons together. It was awesome." Gross, weird. Also on the dais that night, Trump's childhood friend, David Rem, who nobody'd ever heard of before, he said, "In fact, she is the devil. Whoever screamed that out, yes, she is the Antichrist." Businessman Grant Cardone, he told the crowd, "Kamala Harris is the least qualified candidate to ever run for any political office in American history. She makes her boss look competent. She's a fake. I'm not here to invalidate her. She's a fake, a fraud. She's a pretender. She and her pimp handlers will destroy our country. They will." Gross. That's gross, man. Radio idiot said Sid Rosenberg. He said, "I just got back from Israel about 2 weeks ago. They love Trump in Israel. Just, you know, they love him. And I get back from Israel and they go, 'Hey, Sid, do you want to speak at this Madison Square Garden thing?' And I said, 'Sure, it's out of character for me to speak at a Nazi rally. I was just in Israel, but I took the gig.'" Why would you say that? Why would Sid Rosenberg get on stage and described the Madison Square Garden rally as a Nazi rally. I can't wrap my head around why you would do that. Is he purposefully like baiting the media into pointing at this comment as proof that Democrats are correct when they say that this was effectively a fascist hate rally? It wasn't a political event. It was a hate fest. I mean, this is just confounding stuff from these people. I'm not even halfway done here. Maybe the grossest thing of all isn't something that Elon Musk, who, you know, I'm not a fan of, he was at the rally. At the same time that this rally is happening in Madison Square Garden, Elon Musk has a super PAC. It's called America PAC, America Political Action Committee. This is sick. He puts out this advertising campaign. He puts this post out with a video. And the video has a warning label on it. And it says, this ad contains multiple instances of the C word. Viewer discretion is advised. Kamala Harris is a C word. You heard that right. A big old C word. In fact, all of the other C words thinks that she's the biggest C word of them all. That's right. She's a tax hiking, regulation loving, gun grabbing communist. And the worst part, she's proud of it. Kamala Harris, the C word America simply cannot afford. That's so gross. That's so absolutely inappropriate. When we talk about the debasement of our language and the sort of toxification of our politics, it's stuff like this. They think that they're being very clever by calling Kamala Harris a communist, but they're disguising it as a C word. And we all know what the C word is. Men don't get called that word. But Elon Musk's super PAC thinks it's funny to use that word or the illusion of that word to describe Kamala Harris. Again, from the advert, Kamala Harris is a C word, a big old C word. All of the other C words think that she's the biggest C word of them all. They have since deleted that post. If you want to go find that on Twitter, you can't anymore. It's gone. These people are broken. This is the stuff that divides America, and this is why a lot of normal people hate politics. And at the same time, this is why a lot of abnormal people love it. This is why. And when you sit down at the dinner table and you wonder why our politics is so broken and so toxic, remember who it is that's out here using this coarse, racist, sexist language. The most coarse, the most racist, the most sexist language you can possibly get away with. They're using it. And don't come at me with some false equivalence about how everybody's doing this. This is just politics. Everyone's broken. Everyone's just attacking the other side and just slinging mud. This is not a both sides issue. Do not come at me with some false equivalence about like Maxine Waters, who told Democrats to, you know, get in the face of members of the Trump administration when you see them out at a restaurant or you see them at a theater. That's obnoxious language. I think we'd all be better off if she hadn't said that. But she was not invited to say that at a Kamala Harris rally, followed by 10 more people saying the same thing. This is not a both sides issue. This is a one side issue. The Harris campaign, of course, pounced on this immediately. In an example of just how fast paced these campaigns have become, here's a little more of Harris's video response from last night.
I will never forget what Donald Trump did and what he did not do when Puerto Rico needed a caring and a competent leader. He abandoned the island, tried to block aid after back-to-back devastating hurricanes, and offered nothing more than paper towels and insults.
Well, at least she locked down the Ricky Martin vote. Kamala Harris is not letting go of the issue today, talking to reporters this morning. She said that Trump's Madison Square Garden rally last night highlighted the point that she's been making about him all along.
He is focused and actually fixated on his grievances, on himself, and on dividing our country. And it is not in any way something that will strengthen the American family, the American worker. There's a big difference between he and I. If he were elected on day one, he's going to be sitting in the Oval Office working on his enemies list. On day one, if I'm elected President of the United States, which I fully intend to be, I will be working on behalf of the American people on my to-do list.
Hey, speaking of Elon Musk, turns out for a minute there, Elon Musk, who's always speaking out against illegal immigrants, Elon Musk was an illegal immigrant.
President Biden is blasting billionaire Elon Musk for being hypocritical about illegal immigration.
That wealthiest man in the world turned out to be a legal worker here.
The head of Tesla and SpaceX, Elon Musk, was born in South Africa. And according to the Washington Post, Musk arrived in California in 1995 for a graduate program at Stanford University, but he never enrolled in the course.
He was supposed to be in school when he came on a student visa. He went to school. He was violating the law. He's talking about all these illegals.
President Biden with union workers in Pittsburgh this weekend blasted Musk and anti-immigration candidate Donald Trump. Musk posted on X he was allowed to work in the U.S., but the post cited an email in which Musk said he did not have authorization in 1995. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Curiously enough, it was actually 2 years ago today, October 28th, that Elon Musk took full control over Twitter after he was forced to buy it for $44 billion after he tried backing out of the deal at the last minute. 2 years ago today, Elon Musk took over Twitter for $44 billion. Today, the company has 20% fewer active users, 84% less revenue, and is valued at about $9 billion. When he paid $44 billion for it. Business genius. Wow, you guys. Impressive. All right, back to the horse race. In the final week of the campaign in those Midwestern swing states, anxiety and uncertainty is everywhere.
Michigan may play a decisive role in the presidential election for the third consecutive time. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, residents lined up to register at a satellite election clerk's office inside the University of Michigan's Art Museum.
We are truly a 50-50 state.
Political science professor Jenna Bednar is also the director of UMich Votes.
So Michigan as the bellwether. Can you lose Michigan and win?
The state went for Donald Trump by a razor-thin margin in 2016. In 2020, Joe Biden won by less than 3%. It's not just the presidency in play. Former House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers is running against Representative Alyssa Slotkin, giving Michigan Republicans a chance to end a two-decade drought in the race for U.S. Senate. Bednar says Michigan's voters aren't much different from those in other battleground states.
Then that means for sure you're failing to appeal to Wisconsin, and you're failing to appeal to Pennsylvania, and you may be failing to appeal to North Carolina, and that's a bad record.
I'm Jennifer King.
And a new poll is suggesting that Americans are deeply concerned about what could follow the election next week, including the potential for political violence.
About 4 in 10 registered voters who responded to a poll by the Associated Press and the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research say they are extremely or very concerned about violent attempts to overturn the results of the November election. A similar percentage is worried about legal efforts to do so. 1 in 3 voters say they're extremely or very concerned about attempts by local or state election officials to stop the results from being finalized. About 1/3 of voters or less say they are not very or not at all concerned about any of that happening. Former President Donald Trump continues to lie about fraud costing him the 2020 election, and he says that if he loses this election, it's because the election was rigged against him. Already, Trump allies and the Republican National Committee have filed lawsuits around the country, a potential prelude to post-election legal challenges should Trump lose. Donna Porter, Washington.
Two of the nation's biggest newspapers are bailing on their tradition of offering an endorsement in presidential elections.
The Washington Post says it will not endorse a presidential candidate. The Post reported on its own decision, quoting anonymous sources who said an endorsement of Kamala Harris over Donald Trump had been written but not published, and the company's owner, billionaire Jeff Bezos, made the decision. Post publisher Will Lewis wrote in a column, the decision was actually a return to a tradition the paper had years ago of not endorsing candidates. Former executive editor Martin Barron says the decision is cowardice, with democracy as its casualty and disturbing spinelessness at an institution famed for courage. The Los Angeles Times also announced it is not endorsing a presidential candidate. Ed Donahue, Washington.
And the paper's staff and some of their readers are really not happy about this.
The Washington Post made the announcement on Friday, and since then, thousands have posted on social media that they're canceling their subscriptions and urging others to do the same. The decision was made by owner Jeff Bezos after the editorial board had already drafted an endorsement of Vice President Harris. He has yet to comment on the decision. The Los Angeles Times is dealing with similar fallout after that paper's billionaire owner also blocked a planned endorsement of the vice president. Several journalists have also resigned over the decisions. Stacey Lynn, CBS News, Washington.
All right, that's your news bomb for today. We'll step away and take care of some business and come back with more of your calls and texts. 504-260-1870 is the way to get in touch on the Okernard Jewelers Talking Text Line. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back after this. And I'm going to get to a couple of those phone calls in just a second. But first, in response to my commentary about this comedian at the Trump Madison Square Garden rally, Hinchcliffe, this text says, hey, Ian, this is why people who don't even like Trump are supporting him. They're tired of people getting offended over a comedian making a joke. Kathy Griffin got a free pass for holding up Trump's decapitated head. Okay, there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, people who don't even like Trump are supporting him because other people are getting offended at jokes. That seems like a bad reason to support a candidate. I don't think that you I don't know that that's accurate. And if that's why you're supporting someone because their opponent's supporters are offended, you know, it just seems kind of circular. But also, like, your assertion that Kathy Griffin got a free pass for holding up Trump's decapitated head. Brother, what are you talking about? Kathy Griffin lost everything, man. She lost her gig on CNN with Anderson Cooper. She was investigated by the Secret Service. She faced death threats. She got blacklisted. She lost all her TV hits. She was not able to perform doing stand-up. It took her years. Took her half a decade to recover from holding up Trump's decapitated head. She did not get a free pass for that. I don't know what you're thinking. Kathy Griffin got clobbered by both sides for the Trump decapitated head photo. Same texter goes on to say, hey, Ian, the entire legacy media refers to Trump as Hitler, and you're mad that a political action committee called Kamala a communist. No, you have completely misunderstood the point. I'm not mad that Elon Musk's PAC called Kamala a communist. I'm mad that they called her a C word like five times. Kamala Harris is a C word, a big old C word. All the other C words think that she's the biggest C word of them all. Just say communist if you want to say communist. They are appealing to people's innate sexism with that. We do not call our female political candidates C words, whether we mean it or not. That's dirty politics. That's disgusting politics. Please do not misunderstand why I think that's bad. If you want to call Kamala a communist, go nuts. People have been doing it this entire cycle. But don't come at me and tell me that Elon Musk and his super PAC, they don't know exactly what they're doing by referring to Kamala Harris as a C word with a little smiley laughing face emoji five times in a row. Give me a break. I got to get to some phone calls here. If you want to text me, do that. Let's go to Rocco in the French Quarter. Good afternoon, Rocco. How are you?
Rocco in the French Quarter. Hey. I want to praise everybody for having such a great job with Taylor Swift, except for one thing. One thing.
Okay.
We had 90,000 people here from all over the world, probably 150,000 Orleanians and Mediterraneans and Mandalorians went. But what they got fed, they got hotel. They what they couldn't do? Get a ride home. And you know why? The police closed every street in the city. You don't do that. We've handled Hopes. We've handled Rolling Stones. We've handled Republican Convention, Essence Fest, the Jazz Fest. It's all major league. I don't care if it is. I'm no traffic. They killed it. When you got a guy, a lady from New York with her three little babies, have to catch you a Chopper Tools and Pardress, you get to a night bar, Airbnb, somebody dropped the ball.
Yeah, I kind of noticed the same thing, Rocco. You know, like you, living in the quarter, I saw an unusual amount of streets blocked off for reasons that weren't totally clear. You know, if you got a motorcade coming through or something, if the president's in town or the popes are in town, or if there's a funeral, maybe even of a very important person, you block off the streets. But I couldn't really see a lot of rhyme or reason to that. But, you know, they got their reasons. I'll leave that up to somebody smarter than I. Thanks again, Rocco. Let's go to Mary in River Ridge. Good afternoon, Mary. You're on the air.
Hey, couple things. First, I want to say I agree 100% with you. I'm not a Kamala fan. I'm not a Trump fan. But you don't call any woman, I don't care who it is, a C word. We all know what it means. Horrible, horrible, horrible. That being said, and I texted on the day it was done, it wasn't you, which, so I'm sorry, I would have called Scoot if he was here, because he told me, oh, just relax, it's entertainment. But he was talking about phone sex and making jokes and stuff like that. It's kind of like everybody kind of needs to clean up their act. That's not funny even on the phone. He was talking about Trump and sex and phone sex. And I'm like, do we really need this? You know, it's kind of like, let's start somewhere. And y'all keep saying, you know, we're going to start, but we got to clean up our act too. You know, it's, I don't know. I just find it not because you didn't do it. And I think you're an excellent, I would love to listen to you all the time. But your show kind of needs to clean it up too with some of the sexual comments. And as a woman, I'm often like, oh my gosh, that's so degrading. I've never heard it from you. And like I said, I did text Scoot right away and he told me to lighten up about it. And I just kind of found that very offensive. And I'm not a Trump fan either.
Sure.
I'm just a human fan. I'm a human fan.
Yeah, well, then you're in good company here, Mary. Yeah. Look, I
know you're amazing. Yeah. Like, you're very fair. I love listening to your comments. You're logical, and we can have a common sense, unemotional conversation. And I just felt like, you know, it kind of needs to start with your show, too.
All I can say, Mary, is that I think there's a lot of people in this country who are discovering that it's difficult to lift our politics up in a way that doesn't sound partisan. And it's difficult. It's even difficult for me sometimes to kind of say, like, well, this is what I think is right. And this is the kind of language that I want to hear from people on TV and on the radio. And this is the kind of way that I want to talk about what's happening that feels fair, because there's elements in this country that see this, you know, C word stuff and Puerto Rico's a garbage island. This isn't just comedy. Like, the people at that rally were there to be influenced politically. If that guy just went and made those comments at a comedy club, would he get laughs? Probably. And the world would keep turning and nobody would know about it. But when you use this kind of language, this kind of racist, sexist language in order to inspire people politically, I got to draw the line there. We have to be better than that. And not only do we have to, you have to see clearly where you're going in that regard. It's a two-step process. You have to say, I'm going to elevate this discourse here, and here's the concrete steps that I want to take to get us there. There's a lot of people in this country, left, right, and center, that cannot, will not, do not know how to do that. But the least that we can do as consumers of this media is point that out and say, let's be better. 2:55 here. I'm pretty late. I'll step aside and come back with more of your calls and texts after this. 504-260-1870. BRB. All right. Speaking of the election, next Tuesday, we got special coverage for you. Early voting in Louisiana is underway through tomorrow, October 29th. Please, please get out and vote. If not now, make plans to do so on Election Day, Tuesday, November 5th. That evening, you can join Dave Cohen, Newell Normand, and political analyst John Cuvion from JMC Analytics and Polling. Love that guy. For Decision 2024, right here on WWL, starting at 8 p.m. and going till. I have a recommendation for you. If you're tired of politics, if you're burnt out on the election, you already know who you're going to vote for. Maybe you've already voted. Lost is on Netflix. Go watch Lost. It's still a pretty good show. It holds up. I would advise maybe start to bail out after the third season. They kind of lose the thread there. The cheese kind of slides off the cracker. But if you need something to distract you from the horror show that is this election, Lost is on Netflix. Go watch Jack and Kate and Sawyer. That's good, clean fun. Here's the news. Be right back.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word, it's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.